The prodigal son is an insightful parable about the nature of God, revealed through the character of the father. It's the father's desire for loving and forgiving relationships that drives his actions. The elder son is representative of those who consider themselves faithful, keeping the commandments of God, like Jesus' Pharisaic critics. The younger son is representative of those who are considered outside the boundaries of faith, characterized as sinners, like prostitutes and tax collectors. In this story, God is portrayed as valuing the relationships between people above societies and religions, conventions and beliefs. Indeed, the parable takes the emphasis off beliefs and puts it on behavior. Beliefs around family, inheritance, conformity, and penalties are deemed secondary to the restoration of the relationships in the human family. Rather than obey the rules and expectations, forgiving godly love bypasses the boundaries to bring the disgraced one and the disgruntled one back into relationship. In the parable, there are six shameful acts, shameful as according to the culture of first century Palestine. And the first two happen immediately. The younger son, maybe a 17-year-old, asks for his share of the property, and the father gives it. The primary act of wrongdoing by the younger son was not misusing his inheritance, but asking for it. When he asks for his share of the property, it is tantamount to wishing his father dead, for property only passed to the next generation after death. The second shameful act in the story is the father's. In granting his younger son's request, he shows himself to be a fool. In ceding a third of the estate, that's what the younger was entitled to, the father put in jeopardy the financial well-being of the whole family unit. As events unfolded with the younger frittering his finances away, the father's wanton generosity would have been seen as bringing shame upon the whole family. The restless son came to the father and insulted him. The son did not want to be caged by family responsibility and duty. The father, like I suspect many parents, thought of the consequences of denying the request. Then, knowing that his other dependents and neighbors would think him foolhardy and irresponsible, yet also knowing that satisfying relationships can never flourish where there is coercion, the father took a deep breath and said yes. The third shameful act was the youngest son's squandering of the inheritance. It's portrayed as self-destructive, working for a profane foreigner, feeding profane pigs, are signals to the Jewish audience that he's not only sunk as low as he can go, but he's also lost his faith. His squandering also loses him his family, for he would in future have no means to fulfill his duties and provide support to his kin. Well, prodigal comes to himself, and he decides to return to the ancestral home in order to work as a hired hand. The parable does not portray this as a cynical calculation to escape poverty, although the audience may have wondered. Rather, he's portrayed as desperate. He has no expectation that he will be restored to the privilege of sonship. Indeed, he can no longer be a son, for he's actually forfeited those rights. The fourth shameful act was the manner of the father's forgiveness. He goes overboard. He seems to have been out looking for this reprobate. He runs, not the seemingly thing to do for a patriarch, and he kisses him and hugs him. He confers forgiveness when there is no evidence of the son's sincerity or even the request for such forgiveness. This display of emotion by the father character indicates that God's nature is not bound by expected legal and hierarchical roles, but rather by a deep and nurturing love for all, especially ones who are suffering. The father's disregard of legalities is evident when he asks his slaves to carry out orders that have the appearance of restoring the son to his former status, not inducting him to the duties of a hired hand. Forgiving, godly love not only wants to welcome and include, but it also wants to restore. The father has received the son back, and as was normal, is still in control of the property. The welcome means that the younger son can be supported from the property as long as the father lives. In a limited goods society, however, the youngest has not only wasted one-third of their communal resources, but by being received back will ultimately be a financial burden to the detriment of the elder brother. The fifth shameful act is that of the elder brother, who you will recall from verse 2 is a characterization of the scribes and Pharisees, who do not like Jesus welcoming and dining with sinners. The elder brother feels the reception of his wayward sibling is unjust. He does not want to join in the feast, given he is angry. The elder's refusal to dine with his father is culturally also a very shameful act. Just as the younger shamed the patriarch in asking for his inheritance, so the elder shames his father by not eating with him. He violates the fourth commandment, which you all know is honor thy mother and father. We need to have some catechism around here. The elder son sees the father's having brought dishonor on the family by ceding to his brother's request and then welcoming him back. He sees his younger sibling as having brought dishonor in both his request for inheritance and his squandering of it. The prodigal has further shamed the family, according to the elders, by consorting with prostitutes, therefore compromising the family's bloodline. The story is quite clever at this point. Prostitutes is a total projection of the elder brother onto the younger. Well, the sixth shameful act is the father's response to this jealous elder brother. As in his dealings with the younger, the father refuses to assert the authority and discipline of the patriarchal entitlement. He goes out to him and affirms him as a companion and co-owner of the farm. However, he goes beyond just a simple legal affirmation that the elder is the true heir, and he addresses this older boy with the affectionate title technon, or child. Again, we see the father stepping away from dealing with this family crisis by technical legal means. Addressing the elder as a child serves the same function as kissing and embracing the younger son. It is relationality, not legality, that is paramount. It's the finding and loving of his children that concerns him, not his honor as represented by the inheritance. The father rejects neither of his sons. Upon his death, the estate will go to the eldest, who will assume the responsibilities of the patriarch. Yet the father is in the end not interested in morality or inheritance, but the ongoing relationship between these two boys. the purpose of him doing the dishonorable thing and allowing the younger his inheritance, doing the dishonorable thing and unconditionally forgiving him, doing the dishonorable thing and coming out to the elder who has shamed him. The purpose of doing all this is for relationship. And ultimately, the relationship not with him, but between the two sons. Similarly, the power of forgiving love that we call God is primarily interested in reconciliation between insiders and outsiders in society, rather than legalities and moralities. Such love wants to find ways to affirm and include all, no matter what we've done or believe. Maybe the most powerful message of the parable is the most obvious. The tax collector and sinner are brothers to the Pharisee and scribe. Likewise, we are all connected to each other. So let us treat each other like the story's father treats his sons, with respect, with kindness, with tolerance, and lots of forgiveness, whether asked for or not.